Dear ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the conference call of Deutsche Konsum REIT-AG. At our customer's request, this conference will be recorded. As a reminder, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. If any participant has difficulties hearing the conference, please press star key followed by zero on your telephone for operator assistance. May I now hand you over to Rolf Elgeti, CEO, who will lead you through this conference. Please go ahead, sir.
Hi. Good morning, everyone. Thank you very much for your time and interest in Deutsche Konsum. Firstly, let me please apologize for the technical problems we had earlier with this call. There was someone typed in the wrong date, and so it didn't work. I apologize, and I hope that most of you could sort of join now as well. So apologize very much. Onto the numbers. We published a press release and an updated presentation. Both are on our website. As per usual, I may use a couple of slides and then just highlight a few things, and then we go through key questions maybe together. Let me start on page 3 of the presentation with the key highlights of the last fiscal year. First, we summarize here for you what we have acquired. That's not really news to you, I guess, but just to remind ourselves, we've acquired for 160 million euros with an average yield of 9.3%, which brings the total yield since starting the business to 10.9%. So we're still able to buy at very good yields that are, of course, significantly across our cost of above our cost of debt, but also kind of even without that attractive in absolute terms. And the investment volume of 160 million was more than we have expected. The only sort of small problem with our acquisition pipeline was that many of these properties have actually sort of been transferred to our balance sheet much later than we had hoped. You know, in Germany, there's it can take many months between the notarization and the actual sort of economic ownership. And we've had very kind of slow closing procedures for some of them, which explains that not many of them have actually been kind of on the line in terms of cash flow production for last year's P&L. I'll come to that later. So acquisitions were first very strong in terms of volume, and second still at very good yield. So that's the two key points there. Next item, if we look at the operations that we have sort of on the ground, then they are still very much on track. We've had a like-for-like rental increase of 1.2%. That, of course, is not a huge number, but on the other hand, considering that we talk about retail, I think the fact that it is positive at all, I think is probably the key news. And, of course, that number has been positive for the last quarters too. So that's very much sustainable. And also, we've kind of not included the rental increases that we had here that have followed CapEx. So the CapEx-induced rental increase are not even part of the 1.2%. So the 1.2% rental growth like-for-like is just the true underlying sort of rental growth we have in this market. The vacancy has increased slightly, but that's due to the fact that we purchased a couple of properties with high vacancies that we want to work with. The like-for-like vacancy was down, also, as you may have from previous quarters. Most crucially, I guess, of the operational business is the fact that the weighted average lease term, the WALT has actually increased to now 5.6 years, which is up year-on-year. But the important thing is, of course, as you know, our strategy is to acquire at high yields because we take one key risk, which is the lease extension risk. So we do a yield versus kind of lease length game. And therefore, it's of the utmost importance that, of course, we are able to extend the leases. Otherwise, our strategy doesn't work. But here you can see that the lease extensions have worked again and again. So that on the operations. Our financial structure, I mean, has always been very solid, but it's now sort of even more solid. Our interest cover ratio is now at 5.2 times EBITDA. Our LTV, obviously following the capital increase in September, dropped to below 50% again. It's now at 48.1%. Our average cost of debt has been reduced further, actually including the unsecured debt, and is now at 1.93%. We've also had over the course of the last year a rating upgrade, and also quite interestingly, we've managed to gain central bank eligibility of our debt, which means that our banks can hand in the debt to us sort of for repo business at the Bundesbank, which of course reduces the financing cost for them, of course, which in turn should mean that we should be able to reduce our cost of debt even further. So I think that's a very significant item. Fourth point, capital recycling. We've had a very tiny but one sort of reasonable size sort of exit of one of our stores for a yield of just below 5%. I'll come to that later. So we've had a little bit of capital recycling. But of course, these numbers are very strong, even though the volumes are very, very small. Maybe looking at some of our performance numbers for last year on page number 5, you see here sort of the year-on-year comparison for the full year numbers. First, the rental income, that's obviously up 47%, which is, of course, easy because we acquired more properties. Then you see on the second chart in the first line, you see the change in the FFO. And the important thing is that the FFO has grown faster than the rental income, so our margin has gone up. Our margin has gone up for three reasons. Well, first, we've operationally improved, which has a lot to do with service charge management and the kind of previous owner sort of CapEx catch-up. Then, of course, we have a better spread of our overheads. So if you look at the management cost for the business, that has actually come down from 6% down to 5%. So it's a very lean management that we have here. And then thirdly, our cost of debt has come down, and therefore, of course, the FFO margin has gone up, and therefore FFO has grown faster than rental income, which of course then leads to an FFO per share growth that has been quite strong year on year. Now, these are the good news. The bad news here are, if you looked very carefully at our previous quarters, then you can see that the fourth quarter margin was actually weaker than in the first 9 months. So while this effect is very strong, it could have been even stronger. That has to do with seasonal effects in the service charge reconciliation. And the other bad news here is that we've slightly missed our guidance. Our guidance was to have at least 26 million of FFO, and we came in at 25.8. The reason for that is what we budgeted. I guess we planned it wrongly, sort of assuming that our properties would come online earlier than planned. That effect, just for the properties that have come online sort of from the transfer of ownership last year, that effect alone was 800,000 euros in annualized FFO that was missing. And of course, then there's those properties that didn't come on online at all yet in the last year. So that effect's even stronger. So that's the reason we slightly missed our guidance, which of course is very unsatisfactory. But it was a planning mistake on our behalf. But of course, the underlying profitability and run rate is still stronger than we've actually planned. If you look at the current run rate of FFO, that actually allows us a very significant sort of forecast for the current year. Given that our run rate is almost 33 million euros of FFO, we now forecast 34 to 36 for the current year. And of course, for the run rate, then 38 to 40 million, which should be quite conservative, given that we are almost there with the run rate, as I just said. Then, just flipping through the presentation to a couple of more highlights. I think on page 7, I just really want to highlight the change in the WALT. So the WALT has gone up from 5.2 to 5.6 years. That's extremely significant. As I said earlier, given that that's the very heart of our business model, is to actually extend those leases and thereby capturing the very high yields. And therefore, you know, if you think about it, if year on year the WALT, if we hadn't any leases, then obviously the WALT would fall by exactly 1 year. So if it falls by less than 1 year, then we've extended leases. But here the WALT has actually gone up, so we've more than overcompensated the lease expiries. And I think this is really, for me, the most important thing. because that underscores kind of on the one hand the quality of the assets, but also of our asset management, of course, our underwriting capabilities, depending on how you want to see that, but that we're delivering on the single most important thing, which is the lease extensions, which in turn allows us to capture the higher yields. On page 9, we're highlighting that although the new fiscal year is still quite young, we've had a good start to sort of acquiring new assets. And you see on page 9 and 10 a couple of the examples. Again, on page 9, the Biblach Center in Thuringia, very strong tenants with Kaufland. Kaufland's once our favorite tenant, as you may remember. And here we're buying kind of a 6-year leases with a 10% initial yield. If you flip the page, without going into too much detail, there's 4 assets here, again, sort of with higher yields than we've acquired for last year. So that's extremely strong. So sort of the accretion from further assets is still there. And the key message here is that we still have this pipeline, and it's still working, and it's still, of course, massively accretive. On page 11, something very important, which is that for the first time we've kind of had we sold an asset at a yield of below 5%, and you can see this is a very standard product. It's a single tenant discounter, so kind of the lowest quality sort of within our asset range, and even that we sold at less than 5%. With a 4-year lease. So you can see that the market is occasionally there for assets like that. And then, of course, we opportunistically make use of that. So here we sold it for over 4 million, effectively for twice than what we paid for the asset. And it's interesting that whilst these appear to be small numbers with 4 million euros, but of course, if you do the math, if you recycle sort of just one asset like that for 4 million euros and then reinvest the 4 million, sort of into new assets at the current yield, that alone leads already to a couple of percentage points of FFO growth without issuing new shares. And of course, the possibility to pay dividends out of this is of course not insignificant, because that alone sort of allows for a 6 cent per share dividend. So while small, it's extremely significant. On page 12 and 13, you see the usual charts on sort of the spread of our tenants. There's no structural change. It's just nice to see, especially on page 13 on the left side, that sort of the key of our strategy, which is to have the same tenants again and again across the portfolio, that this is expanding nicely, and we're building these clusters. You can see on the right-hand side of page 13 that the lease expiry profile is now looking even stronger than in the last quarter, with not much expiring in the next kind of 3 years, and then it's fairly evenly spread, and the bulk really is kind of 6 years and longer. So that's all looking good. I just flip maybe to page 17, maybe lastly, just to show you the development of the balance sheet strength. And there you can see that again, quarter on quarter, credit data has improved. When I said kind of the interest cover ratio is 5.2 times for last year, but then of course if you just look at the last quarter, then we're already above 6. So over 6 times interest cover ratio is of course a very, very strong number. Our average cost of debt is coming down slightly. As I said, we expect it to come down further due to the central bank eligibility that we achieved this year. So We have the growth of the cash flows and most crucially on the FFO per share cash flows, but we really are not sort of sacrificing anything in terms of balance sheet quality, and this is what kind of this chart underlines again. So that leads me to maybe jump to the very last page, to page 28, just to summarize the where we stand in terms of also our guidance that we published this morning. So first, we on the FFO, we slightly missed our guidance, which has to do with the late sort of sort of transfer of ownership of these assets. This effect alone is worth 800,000 euros per annum. Without that, we would have been in the FFO range and also for the FFO run rate range. The new guidance for both is so FFO guidance for the current year of between 34 and 36 million euros, and for the run rate as of sort of balance sheet end date of September 2020, between 38 and 40. For the dividend, sort of based on the slightly lower FFO, and also, of course, because we've done a sort of capital increase in September, those new shares, for technical reasons, sort of are eligible for last year's dividend, and therefore we decided to suggest a dividend of 35 cents a share instead of 40 cents a share, which is so it's not a doubling of the dividend as sort of envisaged, but it's a dividend increase of 75%. And we expect to see a dividend per share for the current year of 55 euro cents. So that's it from me for now. Happy to take any questions.
Dear ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin our question and answer session. If you have a question for our speakers, please dial 01 on your telephone keypad now to enter the queue. Once your name has been announced, you can ask a question. If you find your question is answered before it's your turn to speak, you can dial 02 to cancel your question. If you're using speaker equipment today, please lift the handset before making your selection. One moment, please, for the first question. The first question received is from Andrew Gibbs from Otis Capital. Your line is now open, sir. Please go ahead.
Hi, Rolf. Morning. Just a quick question. Quick question on those new properties you've acquired. So slides 9 and 10. They all seem to have WALTs at the point of purchase of somewhere between 6-7 years. There's one at 2 years. That's obviously longer, I think, than the earlier business model would suggest, and obviously removes a little bit of the upside of renegotiating leases further out as a result of your input to what you're doing. I suppose two questions here. One, why are they at 9-10% yields with those sort of length of leases? And two, what does it say about the pipeline with regards to those short lease opportunities that you were finding that you could then add value to and extend the lease on?
Mm-hmm. That's two interesting questions. I mean, the pipeline is actually stronger than previously, which is sort of very counterintuitive because otherwise there's kind of lots of shortage of, you know, these kind of real estate assets generally. But what's helping us here is, I think, two things. One is that kind of because it's retail, it's kind of extremely unpopular. And so there's even less competition than we've had sort of 12 or 24 months ago. And so that's the quality and the quantity of the pipeline both have improved from our point of view. And the other effect is, of course, that we are getting sort of better at what we're doing and our network expands and we have sort of leads coming in from the tenants themselves. And our business model is, as you say, is to buy the shorter leases for the higher yield. But of course, we're not buying the shorter leases because we like shorter leases per se. And the upside we manage is not really to increase the rent. As I said earlier, I mean, our like-for-like rental growth is, in inverted commas, only 1.2% per annum. So it's not that we need the short leases to operationally improve the assets. That's not our game. Our game is to kind of get the high initial yield by taking the risk and being sure about that we can extend the leases so that we can take the risk of extending the leases. And of course, if we get longer leases with the same good initial yield, then we're very happy to take it. Although I also don't want to really overstretch this point because in the past we've acquired between sort of 5 and 6 year leases. And now if you do the weighted average of these, they're kind of between 6 and 7, so you're right, but I don't think that's really a statistically very significant effect.
Okay, that's fine. I get that.
The next question received is from Georg Kanders from Bankhaus Lampe. Your line is now open, so please go ahead.
Good morning from Düsseldorf. One question regarding what kind of acquisition volume have you foreseen for the current year? What's in the guidance? The other question I have is regarding this seasonal effects in the service charge income. Can you elaborate a little bit on this?
Yeah, I mean on the acquisition volume, I mean the usual transparent answer is that it's very, very difficult to forecast. We currently have an acquisition pipeline of over 100 million euros that we're working on, and where there's some sort of likelihood that we will go to the notary and actually sign the deeds. By historic comparables, having 100 million means that we do 50 of that, but that in turn is only the pipeline we have currently visibility on. So that's all stuff that we would notarize this calendar year still. But if we achieve that, we are already at even higher acquisition run rates than last year, and the pipeline beyond that looks pretty good too. So I mean, it's really difficult to kind of properly kind of have a view on this. But maybe let's answer this with a double negative. We don't really have any indication that quality and or quantity of our acquisition pipeline will be reduced in the short term. So we are very bullish on that, and we expect to be able to publish significant news sort of on further acquisitions very shortly too. And as you know, sort of the calendar Q4 is often sort of the high hunting season for us, because there's always the odd pressure of guys that really want to sell before the calendar year is over. So we expect to sit in front of the notary even on Christmas Eve typically. And we will make maximum use of it, because it's clear that at these yields and even at lower yields in theory, it would be so massively accretive to do it. So we will do the maximum that we can, given the pipeline. But I can't really say how much it is. I think the realistic expectation would be to do even more than last year, but that's not something that we would say as an official forecast. It's just sort of the way it looks right now. In terms of the seasonality of the service charges, this is the service charges are, well, maybe go one step backwards. I mean, I'm sure you are aware of the changes in the IFRS accounting to how we treat service charges, which is every quarter we need an estimate of what the service charges result will be when we do the service charge reconciliation. Now, of course, for the service charges that occur this year, we will do the service charge reconciliation sometime next year. So we will only know for sure in calendar Q4, very likely, what the service charges in this year will be. So we're talking about kind of having certainty on this in two fiscal years later than where we need the numbers in the accounts. Historically, you would simply ignore this and just book these things if and when they occurred. But under the new IFRS rules, one has to have sort of the best sort of estimate of, well, I shouldn't say estimate, probably the auditors would scream and shout at that, but it's apparently, I mean, for me, it is only a very sensible estimate. So you need to quarter by quarter have sort of an active and passive sort of intertemporal booking that gives the best estimate of what the service charges are likely to be. The problem is that, of course, some of the service charge items are seasonal, because you get for some types of costs you get sort of monthly bills, for others you get quarterly, for others annual, but most crucially for some you get sort of bi-monthly sort of invoices. And of course, we often buy from investors who've been very bad at service charge management, and that's actually one of our source of asset management improvement. So the extra sort of tricky item here is sort of when we this year make improvements to the service charges by, for instance, renegotiating the building insurance contract, it's difficult to reflect this sort of on an intertemporal, very accurate basis as to when sort of this effect actually comes sort of on the line accounting wise. And that leads to sort of a bit of noise anyway on the service charge lines. But because of sort of the seasonality of some of these service charges items, which you then have to reconcile on an intertemporal basis, you get a bit of volatility on that. And that's what has happened in calendar Q3, sort of our Q4 for the fiscal year. Of course, the extra complicating item here is that the service charges are being reconciled on a sort of calendar annual basis, while we have sort of annual accounts ending in September. And there's one, sorry, to maybe cause maximum confusion now, there's one extra item. Of course, when we acquire properties, we reflect the service charge situation into the accounts. So we sometimes inherit claims for service charge repayments that we then later figure out they haven't actually been valid or only partly valid, and then one needs to write them off. Or it could also be the other way around, that they will repay us more service charges than they've actually sort of prepaid, which we have not sufficiently recognized sort of in the balance sheet. And therefore, this is a bit of a sort of, let's say, messy and noisy sort of accounting item, especially when you have a constant handover of new properties and then also change the service charge sort of picture.
But this means then when the portfolio more or less increases and you do less acquisitions, at least one source of noise will be smaller in the future. Yeah? Is this correct?
Yes and no. I mean, yes. I mean, if we stop growing today, then in 2 years from now you would have, I'd say, almost no noise at all from this. But if we keep growing, then you will always have some noise from this. But of course, proportionally, that sort of noise should be smaller and smaller. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Before we take the next question, just a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad now. And the next question we received is from Kai Klose from Bloomberg. Your line is now open, so please go ahead.
Yes, very good morning. I've got three questions. The first one would be regarding the acquisitions you mentioned, shown on page 9 and 10. Could you indicate what was the vacancy rates for these assets, or particularly the one in Gera? Second question would be, you mentioned 800 million was a reason for was the lower FFO due to the delayed transfer of possession. What was the impact on rents from this? And the second last question would be on the adjustments you've shown in the FFO calculation, where we had 1.1 million each for non-cash expenses and others. Maybe could explain a bit more, particularly on the non-cash income. Non-cash expenses.
Yes. Well, thank you. Let's start on the back. The adjustments to the FFO were actually just the item we just discussed. So these were kind of service charges claims that we inherited from prior years to the tenants that actually weren't valid. So they were booked in and then booked out again. So that's basically what that was.
Sorry, on page 22 it's mentioned that you also had non-recurring expenses and for refinancing and sponsoring and the 1.1 million for IFRS revaluation for the convertible bonds. I was just wondering if there was anything in addition to that, what is mentioned on page 22.
No. So I'm just looking at my CFO, and I think the answer is no, right?
No.
Yes. No. That's it, basically.
Okay.
On the 800, it was not 800 million, 800,000 euros FFO impact. That's approximately 1.4 million of rental income that corresponds to. And the vacancy. The vacancy in Gera, The vacancy in Gera is for the retail space is 0%, but we have an additional sort of office space that's entirely empty, and that's another 20% of the property. If you remember, that's one of these cases where that happen occasionally when cities kind of give building permits. They often like buildings to have more than one story, and then of course retail doesn't really like kind of anything more than one level, and therefore you often have empty space in these centers that have been built post unification in particular, where in theory there's office space, but it has never been let. One could almost ignore this entirely. I mean, we have attributed zero value to this when underwriting this, and of course when we buy the 10% yield based on the retail space, which is fully let, and that's it, and that's kind of the asset as we see it. And if we ever let any square meter of the office space, I don't know. Of course, we will try, and maybe we can sort of the classic solution would be to get the sort of doctors complementing with the pharmacy on the ground and that sort of stuff. Whether that's possible, we will find out. If not, it's not a disaster, of course. And if yes, it would be nice. The other possible solution for these spaces are typically sort of gyms and sort of bowling sort of operators. But we're not keen on those because the CapEx relative to the rental income, relative to the creditworthiness of these guys, I think our view is to rather keep it empty. But the actual retail sort of vacancy is 0%, so it's fully let. So one shouldn't expect any, I mean, on a conservative basis, one shouldn't expect any change to the rental cash flow from Gera for the foreseeable future.
Okay, and the last question, do you have any specific or any larger CapEx projects or properties where you want to spend a somewhat higher amount for CapEx in this year in order to bring them back on speed?
The short answer is no, but there are three or four properties where we are considering doing this, not where it's necessary and not where it's sort of, as you say, to kind of bring them back online, but we look at a few where it's possible to upgrade them significantly. So this is in particular, it's one center in Rostock, and it's one in Plauen and one in Stralsund, where the centers are, they're fine, they're almost fully let, but they're let at low rents, and the sort of we currently investigate the option to upgrade all three with sort of higher quality tenants, longer leases, higher rents, and that would entail CapEx, but we haven't decided whether we want to do that. My guess is we will do it for two out of the three, most likely in Rostock and Plauen, but it's not decided yet.
And which amount would this be in terms of CapEx, roughly? Would it be the same, 4.5 million last year or more?
Yeah, I think for the two together, yes. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Dear ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press 01 on the telephone keypad now. And the next question received is from Ralf Seibert from BM. The line is now open, sir. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, everyone. My question is, your initial yield came down a little bit. What are your expectations for the properties you will buy in this year for in terms of initial yield? What are your expectations for the upcoming buys in these properties?
Yeah, I mean, that's very difficult to say, but just as a rough guideline, last year we acquired for 9.3 on average. The stuff we've just bought for this year was actually higher than 10%. We've now got something that's of extremely high quality, where we would be prepared to go down to even 8%. But we also have other things where it's still above 10%. My best guess would be that we'll be just over 9% for the current fiscal year.
Okay, thank you.
As there are no further questions, I hand back to the speakers.
Great. Thanks very much, everyone, for your time. Again, I'd like to apologize for the technical issues earlier this morning. Thanks for your time and your questions. If there are any further questions, we are around and happy to take them by phone or email. Thank you and speak soon. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your attendance. This call has been concluded. You may disconnect.